Hello, I'm Nigel Reed, and welcome to Cricket Central. On this edition, the meat in the sandwich, with the qualifiers complete, the Champions League T20 is up and running. The vaults have been electric. How will they fare on the big stage? The sunrisers are shining, but will the clouds roll in? And will the IPL quartet make the best of home advantage? All that and more on today's Cricket Central. Joining the round table to review, analyse and peer over the horizon, writer and broadcaster Faraz Sarwat, whose encyclopedic knowledge of the game never fails to amaze. And alongside him, Aussie Josh McLean, currently serving as head coach at Toronto Cricket Club, playing as well, I'm told, a man who knows his googlies from his flippers. Four qualified, a reduced to two. We have now a 10-team tournament for the Champions League T20. Josh, I'm going to start with you because not far from Australia is an island called New Zealand, and the team that has caught the eye for me this week is the Otago Volts, who have breezed through qualifying in fine style.
Yeah, haven't they been impressive? Three wins from three games. It's been the McCullum brothers doing the job. We know so much about Brendan McCullum, but his brother Nathan has also done a great job, particularly with the ball, and Ryan Tendiscar. He just, every time he goes out there, he seems such a hard man to get out, and he's going pretty well as well, so good time for them to hit form.
Now, the McCullum brothers, when you've got one that is always in the spotlight, and then you've got kind of got the unsung hero, who I think is the older brother, perhaps a little bit of sibling rivalry. I noticed in the last of the qualifiers, one of them ran the other one out. They laughed about it afterwards because the game was as good as over, but it's an interesting dynamic to have that brotherly love taking place in a team as well.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's something we know a lot about in Australia. We had the War brothers who used to do that, and recently the Hussey brothers, and the McCullum brothers over in New Zealand have a similar dynamic. Brendan's sort of the pin-up boy of New Zealand cricket. His brother, a bit more of a workhorse. So I think they complement each other well. They're almost opposite style players.
But they have performed particularly well, and people are already starting to talk about dark horses when the competition proper gets towards the serious stage.
I think it's probably unfair to label the Volts as dark horses. They've won 13 in a row now at 2020 level, so I think they've got to be considered a real contender.
For us, the Sunrisers Hyderabad, the fourth of the IPL teams, not directly qualified for the tournament, joined the Volts in the tournament proper. I don't think there's any great surprise in that. Dale Steyn, we always talk about him when we talk about the Sunrisers, but he's still not firing on all cylinders. But when you've got him in the team, you've always got something in reserve, even a 75-80% fit Steyn, I guess.
Well, a Dale Steyn at 75%, most teams would take that. You know, still lean and mean, Dale Steyn, and he creates a fear factor. The mere fact that he's in the team is going to play on the minds of the opposition, because you never know what he's going to do. He's generally a very consistent player. He's finding his feet a little bit. He's been out of cricket for a while, and it was good for the Sunrisers that they were actually in this kind of pre-tournament phase where Steyn could find his feet, get some rhythm back, get back into playing, and you know, be surrounded by teammates he hasn't seen in a while.
It's not insignificant, I think, that he has that experience of playing in IPL in Indian conditions with Sunrisers, so it's not something that's an alien environment to him.
Well, that's right, and the level of competition is going to go up for him going into the tournament proper, so I expect that he's going to be a lot better than he's been thus far, and certainly that's a great arrow to have in the quiver for the Sunrisers.
So the New Zealanders and the fourth IPL team join the other teams already qualified. There are eight of those, and we'll get to them in some detail in a little while. Let's talk about the teams that didn't make it before we go any further. An honourable mention, I think, for Misbah of the Faisalabad Wolves, who did his best, but it wasn't good enough in the qualifying tournament.
Well, I think Misbah Ul-Haq probably gained a lot of fans during his the brief stay at this tournament. It was basically a lone hand. You know, he was the only international class player, a batsman in that side. They had Syed Ajmal with the ball, but Syed Ajmal a little bit out of sorts. So it was essentially Misbah Ul-Haq versus the rest of, you know, the opposition. And particularly in that game against the Sunrisers, it almost felt like it's 1-11. And, you know, cricket is one of the rare sports that gives you these kinds of narratives. You know, the boy on the burning deck. And you had Misbah Ul-Haq, 39 years of age, taking on these young strapping lads. You know, you had Shekhar Dhawan, you had Dale Steyn, you had Darren Sammy, you had JP Duminy, Ishant Sharma, and here's this 39-year-old smashing 5, 6, boxes off them, keeping his team afloat. And again, in that final game too, he scored 90-odd runs, again, five sixes, the lone hand, scored upwards of 80% of his team's runs, which is, you know, quite remarkable. And, you know, we were talking off-air before about how, you know, he's a classic test player, you know, has the slow strike rates, builds in innings. And yet, you know, this leap of going from test cricket to T20, Misbah can make that leap, even at his age, where he can smash the ball around and can also drop anchor and play an inning. So I think he enhanced his reputation in this tournament.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? He's the guy we've all seen bat long periods of time in test cricket. And I guess it illustrates the way we're going in cricket these days. The guys who are considered the top echelon players are the ones who can adapt to any format of the game, be it 2020, 50 over, or even test match cricket. And he looks like that sort of player.
Absolutely. The Faisalabad team was never, you know, going to be a contender for the title. It was basically just that they would put their best foot forward. And it seems that they were a little bit out of their depth because most of the players on that team were just first class players. Misbah was the only one really who played at a high level. So it was there to see.
As far as the big picture is concerned, the Champions League T20, so there was a Pakistani team involved. There was some shenanigans about whether the players were going to get their visas before the tournament started. In hindsight, has it been a worthwhile exercise to have a Faisalabad team, albeit in the qualifying stages?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was good for them to be there. It was good experience for the players, and I think they did kind of create their own narrative, and there was something for the fans to follow a little bit. You know, it was interesting because Faisalabad were an unfancy team even domestically. They weren't supposed to win that title, but they did. And things may have been a bit different if you had had a Lahore team or a Sialkot team with maybe four or five Pakistan internationals in the side that would have made a difference. So, you know, the chips fell this way this time, but next time around, it could be a different team from Pakistan that shows up with maybe four or five or six Pakistan internationals in it.
Let's talk about the other team that failed to make it, Kandaratta Maroons from Sri Lanka. We spoke on the previous edition of Cricket Central, Josh, about the fact that Kumar Sangakkara was in a kind of a tug of war between his IPL team and the Sri Lankan team. He turned out for the Sri Lankans, much to the delight of the local fans, but once again, a team that was, by the standards of this tournament, somewhat out of its depth.
It's a little sad, isn't it, that the fans of this competition don't get to see Sangakkara throughout this competition. Now that side lost all of their matches, and it must be said, had he have decided to play in his IPL franchise, we would be seeing a lot more of him. So the fans are really the ones who miss out. Great to see that he did go with his native side. I think that's good. That's good for world cricket that these guys want to play for their local teams. But in the end, we're going to miss out on seeing him play.
What's kind of interesting is that this, on paper, was a pretty strong Maroon side. They had a number of Sri Lankan players in there. And in fact, they were trying to get Rangana Herath in there too. And the technical committee of the tournament said, no, 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 can't sneak in a ringer. And, you know, they were trying to basically bolster the side even more. Now, yes, I agree with Josh completely that the fans kind of miss out, that they don't get to see Sangakkara, and even Sangakkara might be thinking, man, if I'd gone with the Sunrisers, I'd be, you know, playing this tournament. But as we said, you know, in the last edition of Cricket Central, that Sangakkara was just in a position where he really didn't have a choice. It would have really been detrimental to his standing at home if he had chosen to go with the Sunrisers rather than the Maroons.
It's worth mentioning that Champions League T20 is 50% owned by the Indian board. There are other stakeholders from Australia and from South Africa as well. But there has been a move, as you say, to embrace a Sri Lankan team, a Pakistani team. TNT will get onto them in a little while. The English still don't want anything to do with it due to their own end-of-season clashes. But when we see these teams, Josh, coming from Sri Lanka and Pakistan, it's clear that the organisers want to make this as globally appealing as possible.
Yeah, I think that's crucial for the long-term success of this championship. The whole idea of it is to find out who is the best 2020 franchise in the world. And I think it's a great thing to see all the different teams from around the 2020 competitions. I'd really love to see England involved, because essentially they're the ones who came up with the concept, and I think they deserve to be there. Maybe we'll get there down the track.
Is this tournament missing something by not having a couple of English teams in there?
Absolutely, yes. Because, you know, domestic 2020 cricket is actually quite strong in England. You do have some very strong sides. You would have some English county sides that would even have international players in them. So absolutely, I think they would have added a dimension to this tournament.
But the cricket calendar is very crowded as it is, and so for the time being there are no English teams. But there are 10 teams for the tournament proper. We will talk about them. Otago joining Group A, the Sunrisers joining Group B when Cricket Central continues. Don't forget, you can catch all the action on Sportsnet World and Sportsnet World Online, presented by CIBC.
Watch Champions League T20 live and in stunning high definition, exclusively on Sportsnet and Sportsnet World Online. Presented by CIBC.
You're listening to Cricket Central. I'm Nigel Reid, alongside Faraz Sarwat and Josh McLean. We're discussing the group stages of the 2013 Champions League T20, which takes place at several venues across India. We may get on to the varying conditions that the players will find, because I was interested, Josh, to hear Brendan McCullum of the Otago Volts saying after the final qualifier that when his team got to Mohali, they were pleasantly surprised by the conditions they found there. A little bit of green on the wickets, which they weren't necessarily expecting, but he thinks that might have helped their game. We'll get back to the Otago Volts in a little while. Let's talk about Group A, which is what the group that the Volts will join. And the name that jumps out to me, I guess, is the Mumbai Indians, the IPL champions, and clearly expected to go well in this tournament.
Yeah, they're a powerhouse in 2020 cricket in India, particularly because of one man. We know the great man Sachin Tendulkar. He'll have big crowds follow him everywhere he goes. And it's not just him, though. It's not a one-man team. They've got a lot of bases covered and a lot of very experienced players. So I think they are definitely the favourites in that group.
Mumbai, is it too much of a stretch to say it would be a surprise if they don't top this group for us?
Yeah, it might be a surprise if they don't top this group, considering that they're reigning IPL champions. Rohit Sharma's really come along after the captaincy passed to him mid-season from Ricky Ponting.
Was it as late as mid-season? I'm not quite so sure.
Yeah, three games, I think, into it that it came Rohit Sharma's way. And, you know, it was a big ask of the young man because he's got a Sachin Tendulkar on the side. And, you know, it's something for a young man to lead a side with a legend in the team and taking over from Ponting. So, having said that, as a player, Rohit Sharma improved too. And, you know, he's opening the innings. He's very aggressive. They've got a pretty strong side. Even though they're missing Malinga, they still have Mitchell Johnson on the side. They have Harbhajan Singh. So there's a lot of experience there. They can do it with spin. They can do it with the fast bowling. And, of course, the batting is strong too.
The fact that they are now proven winners after all those near misses at IPL, and it's only, what, 3, 4, 5 months since that glorious day, presumably that breeds confidence amongst the players that they've actually, you know, been to the promised land and stood on top of the mountain, and they can actually win a tournament in short order.
Well, yes, but if we look back at the IPL, some of this was actually momentum building, right? That Mumbai started to do well, and they were on a roll, and they, you know, that form continued all the way through the end of the tournament. Now, having broken up the team, dispersed, played for other teams all over the place, you cobble it back together again, and to expect them to play exactly the same way might be asking too much. I think that they will do well in this tournament. There's a lot of quality there, but I don't necessarily think that it's just because they're IPL champions that it will be a walk in the park for them.
So, Josh, it's not just Mumbai from the IPL in Group A. Rajasthan Royals as well are there, and they had a good IPL season. I was very impressed with the way that the Royals conducted themselves through the IPL season, and something we alluded to a little bit earlier on, the fact that the IPL team is not necessarily all chock full of Indians, but the fact that they're playing in India, in Indian conditions, is presumably got to help the home teams, hasn't it?
You would expect so, but as you said earlier, there's a little bit of green grass on some of these wickets. Mm. That may favour, in particular, the New Zealand side, who are very, very comfortable playing in those green-tinged sort of wickets. The Indian players don't see that very often. Subcontinental pitches, we know, traditionally are a little bit dustier. They take a bit more spin, and they can be pretty tough for touring sides to get used to batting on. So it depends on what sort of pitches we see. But if they do leave a bit of green grass on that, that will bring into play that the New Zealanders and even the Australians.
When you look at that Rajasthan side, you know, Rahul Dravid, this is his swan song. This is the last tournament that he's going to be playing. So he'd like to, I would expect, go out with a bit of a bang. Now, there is a cloud over that Rajasthan team with having lost a few players to match fixing. And certainly, I think that has an impact on the morale of the side. On the other hand, it can also be a motivating factor, right? That when something bad happens to you, the rest of the players kind of close ranks and, you know, decide to put their best foot forward and do well in the tournament. And certainly they have the right captain who can bring them together in Rahul Dravid. And there's also some quality in that side, both with bat and ball. So I expect them to actually do quite well.
But Josh, when you're actually out there in the middle, it's a T20 game. It's all done and dusted in 3 hours. From a player's perspective, you know what's gone on off the field and the shenanigans and so on and so forth, but does it actually mentally even enter the equation when you're out there playing?
Well, it shouldn't. All that really matters in cricket is the next ball. And you can't get too fussed with what's happening off the field, with anything to do with politics, anything other than the ball that's coming down to you, whether it be batting, whether it be the bowler or the fielders and the wicketkeeper. So whoever's playing has to just play it ball by ball, do the best job they can, and they should get a good result.
So Mumbai and Rajasthan, you would expect to be well represented and go well at this tournament. As we say, only two of the five teams in each group go through. I'm sure you'll be paying Josh particular attention to the Perth Scorchers for obvious reasons, but they are not anywhere near at full strength, are they?
Yeah, they're probably going to struggle now. They've lost a couple of important players in the last few weeks. Namely, Mitchell Marsh has gone with a hamstring, and his brother Sean Marsh, who's becoming a really experienced and effective T20 batsman, he's gone as well. He's done a hammy. Pat Cummins has stress fractures in his lower back. He's out for at least the next 12 months, which is a shocking blow for him. Of course, Mike Hussey will be playing for the Chennai Super Kings, so they're not even a shadow of the team we saw in Australia in the recent Big Bash.
So, sparing your own patriotic blushes, Perth are not going to be a factor here, from what you say.
Yeah, given their current lineup, they've still got some match winners in there. Alfonso Thomas, we know, is a good performer at this level. Simon Kadich has been around for long enough now to know what he's doing. And Herschel Gibbs, he's an absolute match winner. So it'll be interesting to see how they go.
The Lions from South Africa are one of two South African teams taking part. The Titans are the others. We'll talk about them a little bit later on. Are the Lions going to roar in Group A?
Probably not, no. You know, with T20 cricket, it's hard to say because, you know, one player can have a good day and change the complexion of a game. You know, two overs can change, you know, the outcome of 18 other really good or bad overs. So you never quite know. But if you look at the side, it doesn't quite have the kind of depth that some of the other sides have. To me, the interesting duo is Imran Tahir and Sohail Tanveer in that side. Imran Tahir, of course, plays for South Africa, you know, plays internationally for South Africa, originally from Pakistan. And Sohail Tanveer, the left armer, good in this format of cricket. So that gives the bowling a little bit of something because they've got a good leg spinner, they've got a good left arm medium pacer. And in the batting, you know, Neil McKenzie, Alvaro Peterson, not bad. Not bad, but I don't know if they're necessarily of the same quality as some of the other teams.
So if Otago are the dark horses and Mumbai and Rajasthan go well, it doesn't necessarily look so good for the South Africans or the Australians in this group. Quickly back to the Volts, we mentioned them earlier on, but what we've seen so far has been highly impressive. But those were the qualifiers. Josh, this is the main tournament.
Yeah, well, I think we expect the level will probably go up a touch, and they'll need to. They're now playing for essentially the championship. They're out of the qualifiers. They're playing the big boys, the top teams from all around the world. So all of these teams, not just teams like Otago and Perth, all of these teams are going to have to lift their game to compete.
Again, when you've got that galvanising figure like Brendan McCullum, who can win games virtually by himself, that does help your cause generally, and has that intimidating effect on opponents as well.
Yeah, he's such an electric player when he gets going at the top of the order, and we've seen him score hundreds and big hundreds in this format of the game.
Yes.
So I think he's still got one of the fastest hundreds in the IPL. So he's really a player that the opponents are going to have to get out cheap.
Well, that's right. And if he does well, Otago will do well, and they can actually go all the way if McCullum is having a good day. But history, the way it is, shows you that, you know, when the big games come around, McCullum sometimes goes wandering. He's not quite there. So he could get you up to a certain point, but whether he gets you over the line is going to be something completely different. And it was interesting you'd mentioned, you know, in the earlier segment about the McCullum brothers. And yeah, that can give you the chemistry of the Steve Waugh, the Mark Waugh, but it could also go Liam Gallagher, Noel Gallagher. And you don't quite know how that plays out onto the field. But if the McCullum brothers are doing well, Otago will do well.
Fascinating stuff. That's Group A. We will progress to Group B when Cricket Central continues. Don't forget, you can watch all the action on Sportsnet World and Sportsnet World Online, presented by CIBC.
Cricket Central is presented by CrickHQ, the all-in-one cricket technology platform. One-touch scoring, no mistakes. The CrickHQ app makes scoring fun and easy. Download for free today at crickhq.com on iOS and Android platforms.
You're in tune with Cricket Central. I'm Nigel Reid alongside Faraz Sarwat and Josh McLean. We're looking forward to the group stages of the Champions League T20 taking place at a number of venues across India. Let's move on to Group B, Faraz, and the name that jumps off the page is the Chennai Super Kings. They have proven themselves both domestically and internationally at this format, it's hard to look past them, isn't it?
Well, the Chennai Super Kings really are the powerhouse, you know, in this format, in this type of tournament. You know, IPL champions, they've won this tournament in the past too. They're a side that, you know, they've retained their core. You know, MS Dhoni is the captain, their international players are all there, the, you know, the Dwayne Bravos and the Albie Morkels, you know, and some really good domestic talent there, you know, Jadeja and Ashwin. So cohesiveness is a big part of any team. And, you know, the Chennai Super Kings have that. Now, you can, well, I quibble about their name. I don't like the name. I don't know what a Super King is. But as a team, very, very strong. And you expect them to do well.
Josh, talk a little bit about cohesiveness, keeping a team together, the glue that brings a team together and stays together over a reasonable period of time, and how that translates into success on the field.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's an old saying, but there really is no I in team when it comes to cricket. It's so important that every single player is on the same page. And when you've got 11 players out there, it's not a selfish game, cricket. It can be at times when you're batting, but a lot of the time it's generally the team that has the most contributors on the day and the most people who do their job and do it well. That's something Chennai Super Kings have been so good at. They've got a lot of bases covered. They bat well together. They form partnerships. They bowl well in partnerships also. Their fielding is strong, and they're led by, in my opinion, the best T20 player in the world, MS Dhoni.
It's interesting to note that the Super Kings, despite their success over the years, don't always get off to the quickest of starts. Here we are in a short tournament. They're in a five-team group, so they've four group games to play. You can't really afford to lose the first couple, otherwise you're in big trouble.
We saw the same when they won their first IPL. They were slow starters, and then they built the momentum, and then they finished with an absolute flurry. I think they only just made the finals that year. They went on and won the entire thing, so they need to start winning, and winning early. There's no doubt. They don't have time to muck around here, but expect them to be there come the business end.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a big factor is, you know, Josh said MS Dhoni, one of the best, if not the best T20 player in the world, one of the best captains. You know, in this format, that makes a huge difference. Now, MS Dhoni has won a World 2020 title. He's won an IPL title. He's won Champions League. He's won a World Cup. So one of the most successful captains, and certainly a cool head, and he's the wicket keeper too. So that makes a big difference. I think he's surveying the action all the time. Just a great player to have on the side.
So the pressure and the expectation on the Chennai Super Kings, certainly to top Group B and cruise through, one would think, to the semi-finals. Can the same be said of the Sunrisers? They've come through the qualifying tournament, an expansion franchise in LPL last year, but a lot of the players that played for the Deccan Chargers going back over a number of years. The fact that they have home advantage, the fact that they've come through the qualifiers successfully, does that make them also a contender in Group B?
I think it does. I think the fact that they came through the qualifiers served as warm-up games for them, allows them to work out a few things, allows them to get some games under Dale Steyn's belt so that he can kind of get back into form and get back into playing competitive cricket. The man of the hour in India right now, Shekhar Dhawan, you know, it's all about him. Fantastic player in the form of his life. And in this format, because it's, you know, so short, if Dhawan opens the innings and he can, you know, bat through most of it, the Sunrisers are going to put up a good score and can pretty much chase down anything. So absolutely, I think they're contenders.
And Josh, we've already seen in the qualifiers a player like JP Duminy already making his presence felt, and he's the sort of player, again, who has IPL experience, who can be a big contributor, I guess.
Yeah, he's been in great form so far in the qualifiers, and he's one of these breed of players that brings three facets to the game, and I'm a firm believer that in 2020 cricket, you can't be one-dimensional. He brings a lot in the field, a lot of energy, he's a great catcher, and he's so quick with the bat, he always contributes, and he gets himself runs, he gets himself down the other end, and in particular with the ball also, he comes on, he gets the odd wicket here and there, and he bowls those tricky little offies, which will be pretty handy in subcontinental conditions. So he's the sort of player that should do pretty well for them.
Segue us into the Brisbane Heat, because you think they're the stronger of the two Australian teams.
They are. Traditionally, these guys punch well above their weight. They're not brimming with superstars, and they never have been, both Queensland cricket and the Brisbane Heat, but every year they just seem to get the job done, and they've been an absolute powerhouse in Australian cricket now for the last three seasons. They've been terrifically led in recent times by Darren Lehman. He's now got himself the Australian role, and Stuart Law has come in and he'll pretty much take over where Lehman left off. He's also a very experienced and very well respected Queensland cricket mind. And as we look down the list, you know, guys like Hopes, he just does a bit of both pretty well. Dan Christian, he does both pretty well. Ben Cutting the same. And they've got a lot of options. Nathan Horitz is the spinner. Now, this is their only weakness. I like Horitz as a bowler, but he's the only spinner they've taken to the subcontinent. Will that be their downfall?
There's not necessarily what you would describe as household names on that squad, but you think they're a good, close-knit team that can be competitive.
Yeah, it's not their firepower that's their strength. It's their cohesiveness. They work hard. They understand each other's game really well. And the setup they have at Queensland Cricket is so professional, and they're so good at producing young players into excellent players. That's going to be their real strength. But I tell you what they will miss. Shane Watson will not play for them. And also Daniel Vettori. We've seen him playing for the Heat in recent times, in the last couple of big bashes. He won't be there also, so that'll hurt him a little.
Which brings us back to an argument, I guess, for us that is, or a debate that's going to go on for a little bit of time, about players like Shane Watson playing for their IPL franchises rather than their quote-unquote hometown teams, and what the fans really want to see and what the organisers want to get out of it and how they expect to parlay this to a sizable TV audience.
Well, yes, and also the pay packet for the individual players concerned. That's certainly going to be a consideration too. And if it's left to the player to decide, it's a little bit, you know, it is a choice, right? And in certain places, there really isn't an option. Like when we were talking about Sangakkara, I didn't think he really had the option to play for the Sunrisers. It wouldn't have gone down well at home. But for other players, you know, like a Mike Hussey, maybe it's not as big a deal. And if you're retired from the national side, I think that also makes a difference, right? So if you're a freelance cricket player where you can sign a deal wherever, I think that's different. But certainly the way, you know, international players find themselves playing in all these different leagues, well, it's bound to happen that, you know, more than one of your teams qualifies for a tournament. It's a nice headache to have for a player.
It is the Champions League T20 as opposed to the T20 World Championship, which is when you do play for your country. So I suppose supporters of you should play for your hometown team, Josh, have, you know, something to look at as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, they're not directly representing Australia, are they? They're representing their local teams. And I guess the Australian fans, as long as these guys commit to wear the green and gold, from an Australian side of things, that's all they really care about. I mean, yes, they are representing the country in a way in this tournament, but it's not on the same level as when they play for the country.
Let's talk about Trinidad and Tobago, our nearest and dearest in this part of the world. Here we are talking about literally a national team for us, but a national team that is missing some of its key components.
Well, that's right. You know, Dwayne Bravo isn't there. Pollard isn't there. But again, you know, a cohesive team, a national team, which is really different because even at the best of times, you know, these city teams are just that, city teams, whether it's going back to the qualifying stages with a Faisalabad or a Brisbane or a Perth or, you know, but this is a national team for Trinidad. And if they win this tournament, it's, you know, pride for a whole country. So that, I think, makes a difference. And if you look at the side, it has a number of internationals on it, number of players who've represented the West Indies, lots of experience there, and they will certainly be contenders.
Well, Sunil Narine was the breakout star of IPL last year, took plenty more wickets as well this year. He's playing for TNT, and you would expect him to be able to weave his magic again.
Yeah, he's such a unique performer, isn't he? He's so different to every other spinner in world cricket.
He looks so harmless until you're presumably facing him.
Yeah.
And then you're trying to pick him and you think, oh, which way did that one go?
And that's his real weapon, is the mystery about him. Mm. It's often hard to pick whether he's bowling the off break or the one that comes out the front or the doosra or what's coming out. So he's great to watch. I love what he brings to the game. And one thing about this Trinidad and Tobago side that I'm fascinated with is Jason Muhammad and Yannick Otley are a couple of guys we saw playing in Canada this season as part of the NCL All-Stars team. So that's fascinating as well.
Ravi Rampal had a decent IPL season as well. Dinesh Ramdin, very experienced captain and wicketkeeper. And clearly, for us, TNT are powerhouse as far as Caribbean cricket is concerned, and there's no reason why that shouldn't export to India, I don't think.
Well, that's right. I mean, for me, though, the strength is really going to be in the bowling. You know, you've mentioned Narine, you've mentioned Rampal. So, you know, they've got pace, they've got spin. You know, Samuel Badri is also there. So, you know, and they've been here before. And, you know, and in the batting, a Ramdin, a Lendl Simmons, who's an attacking batsman. So there is a little bit there. But I think the strength for this team really is going to be the bowling.
Quick word about the Titans before we go any further. I wonder whether Titans is the right expression as far as they're concerned, the other South African team, and whether or not they can make an impression. AB de Villiers, again, is the, I guess, the standout name there, Josh.
Yeah, they're really going to rely on AB to make big runs in this tournament. Not too many big names there. Jacques Rudolph as well has some international experience. And Van der Merwe is, he's a real powerhouse, and he's a left-arm off-spin as well. So he'll bowl well, you'd expect, in these conditions. But like the other South African team, I'm not sure they're going to have enough firepower.
Yeah, for me, if this team really, it's going to come down to some of the bowling. Morne Morkel is on the side, Marchant Dalanga, and I think that's a pretty potent pace attack. You know, not you know, great shakes with the spin bowling, but again, AB de Villiers, Farhan Bahardeen, Jacques Rudolph, there's enough there in a T20 game that you could see that they could actually, you know, post some big totals. And again, AB de Villiers, a lot is going to rest on his shoulders. If he has a good day, you know, we know what he can do. He take apart any bowler in the world, and we saw him in the IPL actually take apart countryman Dale Steyn in a game. So, you know, there's a little bit of something. I would rank this Titans team as being stronger than the Lions, but I'm not sure if it's enough for them to actually progress out of the group.
Should we expect quickly on this, because the four IPL teams are essentially playing at home on Indian soil, is that enough of a reason to expect all four to prosper in this tournament?
Well, I think, I mean, the tournament is kind of loaded in favor of IPL teams. It's kind of designed in such a way that maximizes the opportunity for an IPL team to walk away as champions. There's four of them in this.
And two of them in each group. So there's, you know, a possibility that all four might just make the semifinals, Josh.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that'd be a good thing for the tournament. We want big crowds. We want the best teams going through to the finals so that we've got the best games possible. And I wouldn't be surprised to see all four of them pretty close to the end of this tournament.
Dark horse or two, perhaps?
Well, you know, again, the favourites are pretty obvious. You know, you've got the reigning Mumbai Indians, you've got CSK, but I like Otago if Brendan McCullum's having a good day. You know, I think certainly TNT, because of their cohesion, will do well. I just think that any of these non-IPL teams will be very interesting to watch.
Yeah, the only other dark horse for me will be the Brisbane Heat, purely because they play so well together. So it'll be interesting to see if they can handle playing against world-class players in this tournament, which they can expect.
Fascinating conversation. Thanks very much to Faraz Sarwat and Josh McLean. Don't forget, you can catch all the action more or less on a daily basis from India live on Sportsnet World and Sportsnet World Online, presented by CIBC. Cricket Central is a Titan GSG production. Executive producer Rathan Morthy. The editor is Jeff Eaton, and I'm Nigel Reed. Until next time, thanks for listening.